We hope that no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women are ruined tonight and later listening on NABBAclub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Gives me a lot of pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight. This is somebody that I consider a really good friend, and she's really helped me out with some stuff I've been going through over the years, and she works as strong a program as anybody I know. With that, I give you Sandy.
Hey everybody, my name's Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you to the group for asking me to come, and it's always a little bit scary, but within a few minutes it usually kicks in and I'm not so afraid anymore. But I usually end up revealing something I have no idea I'm going to reveal, and I always pray, you know, when I'm sitting as the readings are going, that something that I say touches someone and either helps them to make that decision that they don't want to take a drink today, or helps them to continue on their journey of sobriety. So anyway, I always like to start out with a little reading or something that I find that's helpful. And another thing that I've found helpful in the last few years are these. Anybody know what I'm talking about? So, anyway, there will be a quiz after I read this. So the winner gets nothing except for knowing that their brain cells are still clicking together, okay? This is called Better Than I Used to Be. I know how to hold a grudge. I can send a bridge up in smoke. And I can't count the people I've let down, the hearts I broke. You ain't got to dig too deep if you want to find some dirt on me. But I'm learning who you've been ain't who you got to be. It's going to be an uphill climb, but honey, I won't lie. I ain't no angel. I still got a few more dances with the devil. I'm cleaning up my act little by little. I'm getting there. I can finally stand the man in the mirror I see. I ain't as good as I'm going to get, but I'm better than I used to be. I've pinned a lot of demons to the ground. I've got a few old habits left. But there's still one or two I might need you to help me with. Standing in the rain so long has left me with a little rust. But put some faith in me, and someday you'll see there's a diamond under all that rust, under all that dust. I ain't no angel. I still got a few more dances with the devil. I'm cleaning up my act little by little. I'm getting there. I can finally stand the man or the woman in the mirror I see. I ain't as good as I'm going to get, but I'm better than I used to be. Anybody know who that is?
Jim McGraw.
Thank you. There's the guy. And the first time I heard that song, I was like, wow, he just kind of summed up my journey in sobriety. And I don't know if he's in the program or not, but some of the songs he sings makes me wonder. But anyway, my name is Sandy Stokes. My sobriety date is August the 8th, 2003. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a native Atlantan. Go Tech. Go Falcons. I guess we got to root for the dogs, but I'm a true Tech fan. die hard. So I love sports. I love people. I love motorcycles. I love life. I love animals. I have a lot of fun in sobriety, but let's back it up to when I first got sober. I wasn't having so much fun, and what I'm supposed to do is share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And the what it's like now part's a whole lot better, so y'all hang tight for that. And once again, if you're new in sobriety, know that the person that I am today is not the person that I was 5 years ago. It's not the person I was 7 years ago. It's definitely not the person I was 9 years ago. So I started drinking very young. I did not have very much parenting. My parents did the best they could with what they had, and they were very young. So I never really had any rules or regulations. I just kind of did what I wanted when I wanted to. I was a latchkey kid. I raised myself. And I say this not to criticize my parents because, man, they loved me when I was definitely unlovable in my future years. So graduated from high school, and I had my first drink, I think, when I was about 13. And I was like, holy crap, where has this been all my life? I was very uncomfortable all my life. I never felt pretty enough. I've never felt like I had the right clothes. I never felt like I fit in. I just never felt quite right. And then when I had alcohol for the first time, along with some of that smokable alcohol, I felt right for the first time in my life. And I will say that there are other drugs in my story. There are other 12-step programs in my story, and there's outside help in my story. And I say it not to break any traditions of AA, but it is my story. In order to get it across, I need to let you know what I've done to maintain my sobriety. So apologies extended. So I got out of high school and decided, of course, that I wanted to be a bartender. So, I mean, why would I do anything else, really? I mean, you can drink, you can make a lot of money, you can have a lot of fun, and unfortunately, I don't have any of that money to show for it, but I had a lot of fun. And drinking was a lot of fun for me for a long time. I had a girl groups that we ran with, and we went to clubs, and when we went to the club, here comes the ego, you know, like in Bill's story. We were the club, you know. 15 good-looking women get out of a limo, and, you know, I'm dating myself a little bit, but back in the days when Rupert's used to be a big club that we went to, and, you know, we had a blast, you know. And my consequences were, yeah, maybe I kind of made a jerk out of myself, and, yeah, we all had a hangover, and we all went to the pool the next day and drank pina coladas and got over it. And but as I got older, the consequences started to get worse. Alcohol started turning on me, and by the time I wanted to do something about it, I was powerless over it. It had already gotten me. And a few things happened. I did only get one DUI when I was 18 years old. I don't know how. It's by the grace of God, but one night when I was bartending, I'm just thinking of things that were pivotal that didn't really change my mind too much, unfortunately. But one night I drove a friend's Jeep home, and I woke up with a mailbox attached to the passenger rearview mirror. Luckily, that wasn't a human. One night I went out with a bunch of my girlfriends, and in a blackout I cold cocked a girlfriend of mine, and then she was no longer my friend, and we'd been friends for very long, and I couldn't tell you why I did it or anything about what happened, other than we didn't speak until about 2 years ago when I sought her out on Facebook and made amends to her, and she accepted. I got into relationships in bars, you know, and I think a lot of people do that. It's you go to the bar, you get drunk enough, you go over, you talk to somebody, have a few drinks with them, they go home with you that night, and then they move in a few weeks, and then 2 years later, you burn it to the ground. You know what I'm saying? So that was how my relationships was. So I'd never really had a healthy relationship. When I was about 34, 35, I got into a relationship with someone, and he had his own faults, but he was very much an enabler too, and he took a lot of abuse from me. My car had been repossessed. I got up one night in the middle of the night and looked out, and I knew where my car was. You know, I was well aware that I had not paid the payment in quite some time, but I thought, well, you know, it'd be one less payment I have to pay, which means I had more money to drink. I wouldn't have to pay for car insurance or gas anymore. This sounds like a great deal. So he was insistent on calling the police, and I finally confessed to him that, you know, what the real deal was. And I can tell you that I was grateful that I didn't have a car anymore, because I had, by the time that this had happened, I'm not going to talk a lot about the drinking because you guys all know about that, or you wouldn't be sitting here on a Monday night, but I do have to qualify myself and what my bottom was. But he decided he'd just drive me around all the time and put up with my crap, and I was very abusive to him. In every way possible. I was emotionally abusive to him. I was mentally abusive to him. And I was physically abusive to him. And this went on for several years. He was a great untreated Al-Anon, and you know, a great enabler, and he still is. We're still friends, and he's with his, let's see, third alcoholic since we've broken up. So some people don't ever change patterns, and that's okay. He may be saving somebody's life. So anyway, one night I came home. I was working at Lowe's at the time, right here on Peachtree Industrial, and it was a really stressful job because I had to, you know, pack my backpack, prepare my backpack every day, which included my alcohol, because I wasn't bartending anymore. Let me back up a little bit and say I got out of bartending because it wasn't the bartending. It wasn't me. It was the job, you know. So I figured if I got out of bartending and got into the home improvement business, that things would be better, you know. And so that was the way I, and by the way, my highest position in the restaurant industry was assistant food and beverage manager for the Westin Hotel, and by the end I was working at a little deli, you know. So I had went far down the scale. Even I wasn't even living up to my capacity, you know. I knew I was going down. So I went to work for Lowe's, and I was very, very good there. But you know, I had to call off a lot from drinking, and I had a boss who was very kind and understanding, and he cut me a lot of slack. But one particular night, I came home, and I had been drinking at work, you know, with my backpack and my bottle and my gum and my mints and my candy, and in case I had any of the smokable marijuana, you had to have perfume, you know. I mean, it was a lot of work being an alcoholic for me. So I came home one evening, and I was angry, and I wanted something from him that he wasn't willing to give me, we'll just say. I wasn't real attractive to him when I was drinking a lot. I know, hard to believe, but I was about 40 pounds heavier than I am now. I was very red, and I was very bloated and puffy and swollen and very unattractive, and I smelt like a brewery, and I didn't bathe much. I remember one night laying in the bed with him, and he said, "Sandy, when's the last time you took a bath? You smell bad. Your hair smells." And I was like, you know, what's wrong with you? You know? So I was really mean to him, and I said some other things that I'm not going to say in a mixed group, but my one of my weapons was cruelty. And anyway, but that particular night, like many other nights, I acted out physically on him, and he had had enough, and he called the police on me. And I went to jail for simple battery, and I have went to jail for simple battery several times in my life. For some reason, when I drank, it used to work, you know. It used to make me happy, and I was the life of the party, and then it just made me angry all the time, no matter how I drank it or who I drank or what I drank. And I tried all the stuff, you know, like, oh, I won't drink that. That's what makes me angry. But it was any type of alcohol made me angry. So he had me arrested, and I went to jail that night, and I had to do something that I never had to do before. I had to call my mother to bail me out of jail because he wasn't going to bail me out of jail. I can't say I blamed him. So that night when I was in jail, there was a girl that was in there with me, and she was in there for solicitation of drugs, which basically means she was doing what she needed to do to get what she needed to get. She probably weighed about 80 pounds. I think she had 4 or 5 teeth. And I don't say this as judgment. You'll understand why I'm saying this. And she was a little bitty thing. And when I first went in, I was all drunk and hot and sweaty and all that. So I gave her my blanket, and I gave her my apple, and, you know, all that stuff, you know. And I think I gave her my 2 pieces of bologna with the sandwich with the mayonnaise packet separate. You're laughing. You know what I'm talking about. And the next morning, I was cold, you know. And I was hungry. And I was hungover. And I was wearing an orange jumpsuit. So they took her off somewhere else, and I was there, and I was begging the girl. I was like, please don't put me in the pods. And for those of you who knows what a pod is, it's when they take you out of the holding cell and put you with the general population. And I was begging the girl, please don't put me in there. She said, well, there's a shift change, you might not go before the judge for a few hours. And I was like, please don't put me in there. And I went in there for about 5 minutes, and they called me, and I went before the judge. And when I sat down before the judge, there sat the little girl that was in the holding cell next to me. This was about 12 hours later, She looked over at me and she said, "I don't know what you drank last night, but you stink." And that was a moment that I will never forget. It was a very pivotal moment for me because, for one, it leveled the playing field. I always had thought that drug addicts were way worse than alcoholics. You know, I had put myself as somewhat elitist, and that was ridiculous. Because that girl, I wouldn't remember that girl if she was sitting right there, but she did something that changed something in me. And it made me realize that I'm no better or worse than anybody else. After all, I am sitting in the same lovely, attractive orange jumpsuit in front of the same judge in the same courtroom in the same jail. So she helped me. That woman helped me a lot. And I don't know whatever happened to her. Never saw her again in my life. Or maybe I did. Maybe I sat on her next to the bus. But anyway, so my mom came and got me, and she made me promise that I would get some help. See how I'm doing on time? I'm good. So I told her that I would, and I got out of jail and went into the closet where I was sitting waiting for the cops to come pick me up, and I had a bottle. I don't even like to say what I drank, but I'll say this this time because I feel like it, but I drank Grand Marnier a lot, and I knew there was some left in the bottle, so I went home and I drank the rest of it, and then the next day I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked for the closest one. It's right at the front of the phone book, you know. I mean, they don't have phone books anymore, do they? I don't know. I was glad they had one then. But so I called and I looked for the closest place near me, and it was a place called the Atlanta Biscayne Room. It's over on Claremont. Probably about a mile from where I was working at Lowe's. I was still maintaining that job. Lord knows, if I didn't have a boss that was very understanding, I wouldn't have. But, and I actually told him, I'm going to try to get sober, and could you give me a little, 15 extra minutes to go to meetings? Because it just so happened they had a meeting there called the rush hour. And that was at 6 o'clock, which also was when my break was at Lowe's. So I thank God, you know, was working even at that time, working on getting me, you know, to where I needed to be. So I got there, and wow, you know, the first time I sat down, I'll never forget, people were saying things, and I was like, how do they know this stuff? How do these people know this stuff? Are you kidding me? I mean, I remember the first time somebody said, you know, they peed in the bed. I'm like, wow, awesome. You know? I remember the first time somebody said they had to file bankruptcy, because I ended up having to do that, and I'll talk about that later. I remember about people talking about punching people out when they were drinking, you know, women losing their children when they were as a result of drinking, multiple DUIs. I mean, I remember I heard a guy one time say he was in treatment 14 times, you know, and I was thinking, wow, you know, most of it I related to, but I was so grateful that people were sharing things that let me know that I wasn't like this evil person, because I really thought that I was the worst person that had ever lived, that no one had ever done what I had done, and that I was just going to go to the place where there's fire, and I was just going to burn, and I was probably going to run into some of you guys if you weren't in here too. And I really believed that. I did not feel redeemable. I did not feel worthy. And I got a sponsor, and she was real tough. She was real tough. She was she worked at a place called Mar at the time, which is a treatment center. And man, I mean, I would be like, oh my God, somebody cut me off in traffic, and I'm so bad, I'm just going to go drink. And she was like, did you pray about it? I'm like, are you kidding me? And she'd be like, read page 86 and call me back tomorrow. And you know, it was just so frustrating. But I did, you know, I did what she said. Against my own will, I did what she said. And at about 100 days, I got really, 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 in our terms, you know, I was irritable, restless, and discontent. And I decided that I was going to go to a doctor to, you know, finagle her into giving me something to help me relax. Pills were never my thing, but at that point, I wanted some relief. I didn't care what form it came in, I wanted some relief. So basically, I went and manipulated a doctor to give me some medication. And of course, she said, you know, take these, take one in the morning, one at night, take them for a few days, take the day off. I'm going to give you 10. You're not getting any more. She knew what I was. Oh, yeah, sure. So I call my sponsor, and I'm like, well, you know, she's giving me this thing, this pill. And she's like, well, you can't get that. You will drink if you do that. I'm like, oh, no. You know, and it's funny how when you relapse, everybody already knows you're going to do it long before you ever do it. You know, it's like, and I see that now as the fellowship grows up around me. I see it, you know, and unfortunately, I'm sorry that I see it, but I do see it often. So I, you know, ignored her and went in and did that. And of course, I took, I think, like 2 right off the rip. And they were pretty strong because, like I said, I'm not a pill person. I hadn't had any kind of anything in my system for over 100 days. So I took those on a Friday and a Saturday and a Sunday. And then on Monday, they were gone. So I go to work, and I'm about half, you know, jacked up off all these pills that I've taken. And 6 o'clock rolls around, and instead of making the right and going over to Claremont, I made a left, and I went to the liquor store. And it was horrible. I don't recommend the relapse at all. It was amazing what alcohol did to me after only 100 days away from it. It was really bad. I had a blackout. I had some pitiful and incomparable demoralization during that blackout that, once again, I won't discuss, but it was pretty embarrassing and unknown to me until it was known to me. being as vague as I can on that one, but it was not good. All my furniture in my apartment was tipped over. Red wine was all over the place. I mean, and the weirdest thing, and I still don't know this, but I had gotten underneath my bed, and there was one red wine footprint up underneath the middle of my bed. I don't know how that happened to this day, but it was a mess. My smoke alarm was knocked off the wall, and oh, it was a mess. But and it was very unpleasant, but I'll tell you what it was. It was necessary because that was my convincer. I thought that the crackhead in jail was my convincer, but my convincer was alcohol. Alcohol has to be the convincer. Your parents can't do it for you. They would have done it a long time ago if they could have. Heavens forbid. Your friends, your loved ones, your partner, the jails, getting the piece of paper signed, nothing can do it. The only convincer is alcohol. And it did it, and I was grateful that I woke up. So I really decided to go into action. So I really started vigorously working the steps, and you know, I remember my first 4th step. Oh my God, it was like so much of everybody else's fault, you know. And I think if anybody in here has done a 4th step, it's everybody else's fault, you know. And it's funny because I can go back now and read it and go, wow, really, you know. But I did the steps, and I got up to step 9, and the sponsor that I had at the time was having some problems, and so we parted ways, and we're still friends to this day. She actually was just shy of 10 years, and she drank, and I don't know how she's doing now, but she helped me a lot. I mean, I'll never forget what she did. And then my second sponsor was... it was very funny because I started investing after a little bit of time. I started to try to get back into the religion. And I'm a Christian, and she was Jewish. And I was like, oh, this is never going to work. I mean, come on, you know. And ironically, this person taught me more about God than anybody really probably has ever taught me in my life. And with that, there's many ways up to the mountaintop, but the mountaintop is still a mountaintop, you know. And we went further with the steps, and she did one thing that really made me mad. Other than that, I love her to pieces, and she's just the greatest woman, and I can't say enough good things about her. But she made me start over. I was sitting there with my 8-step list, you know. I got these names, and I'm ready to go out there and make things right, you know. Walking around with the list. And she's like, oh, no, you don't know me. I don't know you. We got to start all over. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? So we did. And I was very grateful for that because I was able at that time, I was right about a year sober, and I was able to be a lot more honest with things. And I had more out, and I had some more clarity of thought, so some things popped up that I had forgotten or didn't want to remember or whatever. And I think my first spiritual experience was with her because in the Jewish faith, they don't get on their knees and pray. And I didn't know that, you know, because I'm supposed to know everything, and I'm way too cool to ask you about anything, you know. So you guys get that too, huh? So I was able to ask some questions, and when we got to the fifth step, I went over to her house, and I was like, you know, I got to do this again. But I was relieved in some ways, and we got on our knees and we said the third step prayer, and then we went about it. And when I got up off my knees at that moment, something happened. Didn't happen the first time when I did it with my first sponsor, but something happened, and I was like, this calm came over me. And we did some fun stuff. We did some different things with the steps. Like, there were some things that I had done that I wasn't able to go to the person because of the nature of the offense. And so I was able to write a letter and say everything I wanted to say, and then we went out in the front yard and we burned it. And I was like, A, burning stuff is cool. And then B, what she told me is that smoke rises. So, you know, it goes up, and then we can let God have it, and we can let go of those things. And that really helped me. And she was my sponsor for many years, over 3 years. And, man, she got me through some times, and she turned me on to some really good stuff. And then I got into a relationship at 5 years sober that was extremely unhealthy and caused me a lot of pain, self-inflicted pain. You know, I chose it, not putting any, you know, there's no bashing here. I love men, by the way. There's no men bashing in my story and never will be. I'm not bitter and I'm not angry. I made bad choices. And and through this relationship, I really turned into somebody that I wasn't, and I wasn't true to myself, so I had to get a tattoo that says, "To thine own self be true," which is William Shakespeare, which it says in all of our coins, and the word true points at me about 10,000 times a day, but I lie to myself all the time, you know? So, anyway, the bottom line is I was so wrought with emotional pain over not knowing how to, A, get in a relationship sober, and B, not knowing how to get out of a relationship sober, that I got to a point that I was, I wouldn't say suicidal, but I was to a point where I didn't want to live anymore, but I just didn't want to do anything about it. I was real hopeless. And I'll tell you, when you don't have a drink or anything else to go to and you're hopeless, it's bad. I mean, it is a bad place to be, to not know what to do and to be stone cold sober. So I joined this other fellowship through my friend Butch. Go ahead, Butch. I'm giving you the props, the shout out now. Butch has heard this story so many times, he could come up here and tell it for me, by the way. He's been my friend since the beginning, but he took me to another program called CA. And through CA, I met my sponsor that I have now, Carol, shout out. And it was really funny because in that fellowship, there's not a whole lot, there's more men than there are women, and there weren't a whole lot of women in that group. And man, I was in so much emotional pain. I can't even tell you. I mean, I had worked steps. I had written it out. I had done four steps. I had prayed. I had written. I had went to church. And I just had this resentment that wouldn't go away. And she was there that night, and she was talking about, ironically, I remember it, she was the discussion leader, and she was speaking about staying in unhealthy relationships too long, because I think she had just been through a breakup. And she was sharing in a very general way, but my friend Butch and our other friend Allison, they were both like doing this to me, like, that's who you need to talk to. Because my other sponsor had given me a lot of suggestions, and I didn't take any, and we just needed to part ways. So there I was, crazy, without a sponsor. And then I go to this other fellowship, and there she is. So I'm for all recovery, man. I'm for all, whatever you need to get better, I support it. And that's my standing on it. And once again, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and it saved my life, and it works real good for not drinking, but there's other help. And you know, Carol became my sponsor. I asked her, and we sat down and we went through the book again. And once again, more stuff came out. And I did four steps and fifth steps. I mean, I was just so angry, and I still couldn't get rid of it, you know. So I start going to see some outside help. And the outside, once again, I'm willing to go to any lengths, man, I'm telling you. And I'm not really that crazy, believe it or not. I'm pretty sane, but at that time I just wasn't. And that person suggested the program of Al-Anon. And that was where I got my relief. And like I said, AA works real good for drinking, but Al-Anon works real good for interpersonal relationships. It's made me a better sponsor. It's made me a better friend. It's made me a better spouse. It's made me a better dog lover. I walk dogs for a living. I mean, it's helped in every single aspect of my life, and I'm very, very grateful for that program. And that's all I'll say about that, but it did turn something around in me. And I got better. You know, I mean, I finally got that demon off my back. And the other thing that helped me was the 9:30 study group here in the morning. And Tinsley was there, Jill was there. And there were mornings when I got up, and I knew that if I got to that group, I knew that I would be okay. You know, and thank God it was 9:30 in the morning, man. Because some days it felt like not being sober. You know, like I didn't want to bathe and I didn't want to get up. You know, and clean up, dress up, show up. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. I wanted to lay in the bed and be sad and be sorry. I didn't really want to drink, but that group held me up, and all the groups held me up. My sponsor held me up. My friends held me up, and life got pretty darn good, you know. Things started happening. That was several years back, and I made a commitment to myself to do some work on myself. So I delved into all those things I just talked about really heavily, and worked a lot of things out in myself. And one thing I realized is that I am a child of God, and I'm a person of worth. I deserve to be here just like anybody else. I'm good enough. I'm special. There's only one of me. You know, yeah, and AA, I'm just another alcoholic. I haven't done anything worse or better than any of you guys, just variations. But there's only one person with a fingerprint of mine, and that's me. And that really, really helped me. And you know, I still struggle with the self-esteem, and I think that I probably always will. But I know that I'm redeemable. So I stayed single for a few years, and man, life got big and fun and interesting, and I was doing all kinds of stuff. I was hanging out at the pool all the time, taking trips, riding around. I met some friends. I got on a motorcycle for the first time in like 20 years. The people I was hanging out with, I sure didn't want to get on a motorcycle with any of them. And so I started hanging out with some friends that had a bike, and I was fearful. I'll tell you, the first time in 20 years I hadn't been on a bike, and I was scared. And I prayed. I got on my knees and I said, God, I want to enjoy this. You know, I miss this. That's one of the best memories I used to have when I was a child with my dad, is being on the back of that Honda 650, you know. My dad was a Honda. I'm a Harley girl, but that's okay. I still love them. you know, I had those memories, and the minute that I swung my leg over that bike, it all went away. God took that right away, you know. He said, no, you're going to have a good time. And now people are like, oh, aren't you scared? And yes, I am scared. I've lost a friend this year on a motorcycle. I've had a few go down and hurt themselves. Luckily, it hadn't been me, but hey, you know, if that's the way I'm supposed to go, I'll be happy while I'm doing it, and the wind will be in my hair, you know? So life got real fun and good, and I was sponsoring, like, oh, I don't know, 15 girls at the time, you know. It was ridiculous. It was retarded. I'm just going to tell you, it was crazy. I was going from the 10 o'clock meeting here, the 10 o'clock meeting Triangle, the 10 o'clock meeting at 8111, and, you know, none of those girls stayed sober. Not one single one. They're all about half my age, but you know what? I did, and it was perfect timing, you know, because it kept me out of my head long enough to get my head screwed back on straight. So it'll be 2 years in February, and I met someone, and he's a normal guy, Well, I don't know about normal. Frank knows him now. He's not real normal, but he's he drinks like a normal person. For God's sakes, he has a drink every night, and he puts like this much in the glass, and he doesn't even finish it. I mean, I'm like, could you finish that, for God's sakes? It doesn't bother me that he drinks. It bothers me that he doesn't finish the drink, you know? I mean, really, and could you pour yourself a real drink? That's not even an airport bottle, you know? I mean, he buys a bottle, and it lasts a month, for God's sakes. I mean, what is that? I don't understand that. You know, but he can do that, and I can't, and I'm well aware of it. But we've had ups and downs, and we've had struggles, but, you know, we're engaged, and we've been engaged a long time, and we might be engaged the rest of my life, and that's okay, too. You know, because the question is, when are you getting married? You know, I don't know. Does it matter? anyway, I've never been married thus far, and it's worked out pretty good, so I'm at a happy place, and the one thing I want to talk about a little bit, and I love him, and he's great, and he's usually here front and center, but he's out of town right now, you know, and he totally supports the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he has been known to call me out on a few things. He's been to enough meetings that he knows what we're talking about. You get what I'm saying? Which can be, you know, good and bad, but what I want to talk about in the last few minutes is I want to talk about healing, and that's really where it is now for me. What I've really focused on for the last, really since Steve has come into my life, because he took a lot of the stuff that I used to worry about that I don't worry about so much anymore. So specifically healing with my parents. And I was the girl that either didn't show up or showed up late and left early. I was the girl that if my mom even managed to give me a suggestion, I would hang up on her on the phone. I wasn't there. You know, there's sins of commission and there's sins of omission. And I had omitted myself out of my parents' life. And I didn't think I hurt anybody, you know, because I never had my parents, except for the one time, bail me out of jail. I always paid my own bills. I'm from Fayetteville originally. I moved up here to get away from them, you know, so they wouldn't know what I had become. So, a lot of healing has taken place. A few years ago, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I was scared to death. And I have to say why I was scared to death. I mean, of course, I was scared to death for her, but I was scared because I didn't know what to do. And I had to call people and say, what do I do? And they said, you be there. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to do anything. You just show up. You tell her you love her. You know, you go to the hospital. You go down and spend time with her. You call her every day and ask her how she's doing. You know, my mom was, we had a very struggled relationship all my life. She's what I would call a difficult person. I am a lot like her. I have a lot of her characteristics. And I remember when people used to compare me to my mother, I used to get so angry. And now, wow, you know, thanks. That's a huge compliment. And I'll tell you what happened to my mom with the breast cancer. I thought that when I got sober and, you know, I got all lofty and spiritual and stuff, you know, that my mom was going to change and we were going to have one of those awesome relationships like you see in the movies, you know. All this healing was going to happen and we were going to go shopping and take trips and, you know, tell each other things and, you know, and it didn't happen. It got worse for a while. And my mother got breast cancer, and she had a spiritual experience, and it didn't have anything to do with my sobriety, I'll tell you, nothing. And now we're planning a trip, a road trip, in April to Texas for 7 days with my mom. Okay? We've been shopping. We talk about things. I call her. I can trust her. We have these conversations, and sometimes I'm like, okay, who put the alien in my mom and replaced, you know, where's Pat, you know? It's amazing, you know, and it just shows me that God's doing the work. I'm not doing the work. You know, God is doing all the stuff. He's got the chessboard up there. We're just the pieces, and we've just really, it's just been miraculous. I can't tell you how grateful I am, you know, that, and I think part of it is age, too. You get older and you want to be close to your parents and you know that they're, you know, they're not as young as they used to be and you want that healing, you know. And I'm so grateful for it. A funny story, Thanksgiving. I saved this for the meeting, Carol, because I came over here with my sponsor and I was going to tell her, and I said, no, I want to give her this one in the meeting. So we're sitting at the table at Thanksgiving, and my mom started talking about the trip, and we were discussing the trip in April, and she said, well, you remember the last trip we took together wasn't so good. That was, I don't even remember what year it was. It was 15, 20 years ago, and we went to Atlantic City with my mom, my sister, her two sisters, my cousin, and my mom and her two sisters worked for a gynecologist office, and the whole gynecologist office, all the doctors and the nurses and their wives and husbands and everybody went on this big plane to New Jersey for a 3-day gambling tour. Well, Sandy was there. And she got kicked out of the casino several times for inappropriate behavior in a casino. So y'all figure that one out. I'm going to be general about that. And then I also took the smokable alcohol with me on the plane. And evidently my mom came in the room and I was, you know, imbibing in the smokable stuff that I had taken on the plane. And I embarrassed her in front of her coworkers. And my answer was, we're in Jersey. Nobody knows me. And, you know, I was sitting at the table in the shame, you know, that shame that you get still every once in a while slaps you in the face. And my mom looked up and she said to Steve, and she said, you know, it's like Sandy's not even the same person anymore. And that's the good stuff. That's the stuff that you get, you know. That's the stuff that my mom would actually say she was proud of me. That's big. I mean, really. So, that was an awesome Thanksgiving. And it was embarrassing, you know. I mean, and but it's also just great. What she was saying is, I forgive you. I love you. And they both loved me when I wasn't very lovable. And there's been forgiveness with my dad, too. I played my first round of golf with my dad when I was about 3 or 4 years sober, and I've told this story before, but I think I might be able to do it without tears because I've told it a few times. But I went and played a game with him, a golf game with him, and there was this bracelet that my grandmother gave me when she passed away, but I never got it. My grandmother's been dead about almost 30 years, and this happened 4 years ago. So we're sitting, my dad lives in Alabama now, and we're sitting on the couch, and my dad comes out and gives me a box. And the box had the bracelet in it. And that was my dad's way of saying, you can have this now because you're not going to pawn it. Basically. But deeper, I'm lightening it up because I'm heavy and I don't want to be too heavy, but that was his way of saying, I love you and I forgive you and I know you're okay. And that's really all your parents want, right? They just want you to be okay. So I've spent a lot of time with my dad, and my dad has some health issues as well, and I try to go see him and I call him, and you know, I could sit here and talk forever about the just so many more wonderful things that have happened. But for me, you know, I try to, every time I tell my story, I kind of try to update on the things that are going on and the things that mean the most to me at the time. And, you know, I'm having some struggles that are beyond my control, we'll just say. The girls may understand it that are of a certain age. and it's difficult for me, you know, and I'm struggling a little bit with my emotional instability, but I know that no matter what, that I don't have to drink and I don't have to be miserable and I have a place to go. And no matter what I'm talking about, I can look around the room and I see people nodding their heads, male, female, black, white, old, young, whatever. and I see them, and I see that they understand what I'm talking about. And that's what the fellowship has given me. And I just can't tell you how grateful that I am that I'm sober and that I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I'm here, and I'm done doing this right now. But I love you all, and I really thank you so very much for listening to my story, and I hope that helps somebody. Thank you.
Just awesome, Sandy. Home run.
We'll all be together on that broad highway.